Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Conspiracy theorists were once relegated to the fringes of society, but now the popularity of these theories, like QAnon, is rising, and the impact could be devastating. A conspiracy theory generally refers to any theory of an event in which a clandestine but influential organization is responsible for creating disinformation or a major world event. Things like the Earth being flat or that the moon landing was faked by the U.S. government, despite evidence to the contrary. While these theories are contradicted by most objective facts, they hold power over people who want to believe in them, people like Richard McCaslin. McCaslin, also known as the Phantom Patriot, was a conspiracy theorist whose dedication to these theories led him to stage an armed attack at the Bohemian Grove in California. McCaslin's life and the conspiracy theories that defined it are the subject of a new book by Milwaukee-based author T. Krulos. American Madness looks at the impact of conspiracy theories through the experiences of McCaslin. Krulos joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the rise of QAnon, the allure of conspiracy theories, and what his relationship with McCaslin taught him about the people who believe.
This is a big question, but for the uninitiated, how do you describe QAnon and the conspiracy theories that go along with it?
So QAnon is something that developed in 2017, and it's a little bit different from other conspiracy belief because it's almost cult-like in the way that they operate. So the core of the belief is that there is this satanic cabal of pedophiles that include very prominent Democrats like Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, but it also includes just this sort of lineup of the fake news media and crisis actors. And QAnon believes that Trump is secretly working on this plan called the Storm, where he's going to sort of sweep up this entire ring and, you know, put them all in jail. So he's seen as sort of this hero figure fighting this evil satanic cabal. And some of their ideas are just really off the wall. They started circulating a theory that Democrats had imprisoned mole children underneath Central Park in New York. Some of them believe that Tom Hanks is actually dead and has been replaced by a deepfake. So some of the ideas are just really frightening. And it's a growing sort of social movement.
I mean, the core ideas that you just said in and of themselves seem pretty outlandish. The idea that a number of politicians would be engaged in what's essentially a child sex trafficking ring. But it's interesting to dig into this in part because your book really focuses on this man, Richard McCaslin, also known as Phantom Patriot. And this is a man who is so absorbed with so many of these conspiracy theories that, you know, as you kind of go down this rabbit hole with him, you go, well, all of these ideas are so outlandish. And yet, you know, once you kind of believe that nothing can be as it seems, you know, you go down this road with him and you go, well, I guess if you twist everything, you can make it be what you want it to be. Can you give us some background on Richard McCaslin? Just to start there.
Yes, and you're absolutely right, too. Once you kind of take that first step into conspiracy world, the rest of it sort of follows pretty quickly, I think. So Richard emailed me way back in 2010. And at that time, you know, he would probably be considered to be a fringe character. And it's really shocking to see how now there is a whole group of people who think like him. But he experienced a really rough patch in his life. Both of his parents had died, and he was just having trouble finding fulfillment. So he's kind of down out all these bad things that happened to him, and he latches on to someone who's pretty well known now, Alex Jones. And he starts absorbing this conspiracy media by Alex Jones, and he sort of fixates on a place called the Bohemian Grove, which is a secret retreat out in California that includes some of the world's most powerful and wealthy men. So he starts hearing conspiracy theories about this place, and he decides that he's going to raid it because he hears that there are child sex trafficking victims in this place. And yeah, he just really absorbed all of this conspiracy media. He went to prison, and it only really got worse for him. He kept like spiraling into this conspiracy stuff. And so now, 10 years later, we're seeing that maybe he was in a way ahead of the curve, I guess you could say, because it's become so prevalent in our culture.
The book really maps out his descent into these corrosive conspiracy theories. It seems like he was always a man who was interested in fantasy to some extent, comic books, cosplay, superheroes, and those other kind of mainstream forms of fantasy. What made these kinds of conspiracy theories so attractive to someone like Richard?
Well, I think in his case in particular, as you mentioned, he really got into comic books as he was growing up. That was his escapism. And there really wasn't much else at that time, he didn't have the internet or anything like that. So I think that those comic book storylines really sort of influenced how he viewed the world. He saw the struggle of good versus evil, of a superhero taking on a Legion of Doom style cabal of villains. So comic books were very influential on him. And I think a lot of other conspiracy theorists, it might not be comic books, but conspiracy theories kind of give them a plot that, the world isn't messed up because of some random things, that there's a secret plot and plan, and that helps them, kind of cope with their fear and anger about the state of the world.
Do you think there was a specific moment for Richard, specifically Richard, because you did get so close to him, that really dragged him down the rabbit hole past that point of no return?
Yes. It's something I speculate in the book. Like, he just was really in the wrong place at the wrong time. Because during this very vulnerable period where, he had lost his parents, he had lost his job, he was having trouble with his creative outlets that he wanted to engage in, he just happens to be living in Austin, Texas. Austin is the home of Alex Jones and InfoWars. And at that time, he didn't have as big of a media presence as he does now, but he made these documentaries that screened on the local Austin cable access channel. So if Richard hadn't been in Austin, and if he hadn't been sitting on his couch this particular night and had seen this documentary about the Bohemian Grove by Alex Jones, I mean, things might have turned out a lot differently, but he really fixated on what Alex Jones was saying, and he was just in the right state of mind to kind of, explore that theory and how he was going to embark on this sort of superhero adventure to stop this, evil conspiracy. So I think a lot of things in his story were just him being in the wrong place.
Alex Jones is a character that, of course, comes up continually in this book. How does he feed the paranoia of someone like Richard?
Yes, and it's really interesting to see that not just Richard, but over the years there's been several other people who have done similar things to him, and Alex Jones' name comes up over and over again. He really presents himself as sort of a David versus Goliath, a truth teller, someone who's very bold. He engages in a lot of ambush journalism where he'll confront politicians on the street. He snuck into the Bohemian Grove and secretly recorded footage in there. So, I think that's really the appeal of him, is that He's brash and bold, and a lot of stuff that he says sounds like it might be true. So people really follow him, and his words start to sink in.
An idea that's brought up in the book about a lot of these different conspiracy theories is the idea that many of them have just a kernel of truth, which allows people to latch on to that and then paint such a different world that is very divorced from facts and often logic. When it comes to Alex Jones and the kinds of ideas he's spewing, what are some of the things that we can attribute to him for people who might not be as familiar with, his specific ideologies? I think most of our listeners will know who Alex Jones is, but maybe not everything he talks about.
Yeah, his ideas really run through the entire conspiracy gamut. So he was a very early 9/11 truther, as they call themselves. Shortly after the Twin Towers had been hit, he was on his radio show talking about how it was an inside government job, a false flag, as he calls them. And then over the years, he's talked about everything. Some of them are very bizarre, like he's talked about Hillary Clinton literally being a demon. One thing that he's very well known for is the Sandy Hook case. So on his show, he and many guests that he had suggested that Sandy Hook had actually not taken place, and that, these dead children were fake, and that the parents that we see on TV were actually just crisis actors who were pretending to be parents. This eventually came back to bite him pretty good because he's had lawsuit after lawsuit from the Sandy Hook parents who have taken him to court, for libel slander reasons. But, more recently he's been in the news because he's led anti-mask protests down in Austin and has talked about the pandemic being fake and stuff like that.
Well, and those kinds of conspiracy theories have gained a lot of steam, especially among those in the Republican Party, people who tend to be more conservative. And QAnon, as well as these other conspiracy theories, have become much more pervasive, to some extent, more mainstream through politicians like President Trump. What do you believe the dangers are there of these ideologies? You covered a bit of it with, the different vigilantes, I guess we might call them, who have gone out and done some things. But what are some of these dangers?
Yes, it's a very dangerous time, and I think people should really be concerned about it. Number one, the pandemic. Obviously, if you have a population of people that believe it's a hoax and they don't think they need to wear masks or socially distance or anything like that, then you have people that are actively spreading this pandemic. QAnon this year has done something that I did not expect to see, which is they've gone from sort of a corner of the internet to running candidates who are QAnon believers. So, for example, in Georgia, Marjorie Greene is pretty certainly going to win a seat in the House of Representatives for her district in November. She's running against a Democrat in a very deep red area, so it looks very likely she's going to win. These candidates are funded by QAnon has their own super PAC, which is called Disarm the Deep State. So a lot of these candidates are getting money through that. And, it looks like there's a couple other candidates who could potentially win their elections too. So this is obviously very dangerous because one representative, okay, well, if you start getting more and more QAnon people in, what's next? They could form their own caucus. You might start seeing a flat Earth party, running for elections. And Trump, of course, because of his ego, likes QAnon. He thinks, that they're supporters of his, and that's all they need.
Now, throughout the book, you really explore this relationship that you developed with Richard McCaslin. Of course, his life met an unfortunate end. But what did you learn about conspiracy theorists and the people who make up these groups through your relationship with Richard?
Yeah. I mean, I think people see these people on the internet and they think, oh, this is a delusional crackpot and they're stupid or stuff like that. But, you know, I met Richard 3 different times in 3 different cities. And when I met him, I was a little bit surprised because he was very polite. He didn't seem stupid. He's, you know, reads a lot about American history and understands how to function as an adult. And so I got along with him pretty well, actually. We had a couple of arguments online about stuff, but overall, I did consider him to be a friend. And in talking about this book to people, and I've talked to a lot of people about it over the years as I worked on it, I found that almost everybody I talk to says, you know what, this sounds like my ex-boyfriend, or someone I used to work with, or somebody who lives down the street. So conspiracy theorists are everyday people, too. So I think it's important to try to be respectful when you talk to these people. But it's also very challenging because there's not really a lot of evidence you can show them that will make them change their mind. Because anything you show them, they're going to dismiss as being, you know, fake news or a hoax or something like that. So it is frustrating to try to talk to them.
It's difficult in a world with objective facts to argue with someone that the grass is green when you're both looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If the other person decides it's not, it's not much you can do.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the case of, like, I went to a flat earth convention, which I wrote about in a chapter in the book. And it's just like, how do you argue with someone that believes that the world is flat? You know, you can't really do it. They believe that every photo of the Earth is a fake, and that, you know, NASA has been lying to us, and it's just really hard to have a debate with someone that believes that.
T. Krulos is a Milwaukee-based writer and author of American Madness, the story of the Phantom Patriot and how conspiracy theories hijacked American consciousness. Krulos spoke with Lake Vexjoy Powers.